exciting that we have such a cool chance at Eastman to do a big premiere like this with Kevin Putz, and he's an alumni. Just in general, you've probably premiered lots of new works before, but what kind of work goes into getting a score that you've never heard, never seen before, and preparing it with an orchestra?
This one was rather easy, because when you have a piece that's written for voice, generally at the same time when the composer generates a full score, either the composer or someone for him generates a piano score. So first thing I did was actually get the piano score and learn to play it to the best of my ability. The only one that I found that actually I had trouble with was because it was written on three staves was the first movement of it. But the rest was rather playable, rather accessible. And from there, you just kind of look at the harmonies, and what's most important is you look at the words and you see how the composer actually set the text, because you can actually deduce from the way he said it how the flow of the language is. I mean, this happens to be in our native language, so it makes it a lot easier.
Absolutely.
And you actually practice saying it in the tempo that he is designated in to see if you can find a musical shape to the language that is there and a musical shape to the language that the composer uses. In other words, so you're trying to incorporate the musical flow with the natural flow of the language, and one yields the other. And then you look at the meanings of things, or what things strike you in terms of color, in terms of what things actually mean on a more emotional level. And you kind of say, well, what can I do musically to heighten that? It becomes a lot of fun. I mean, it's a lot of fun to do this.
Absolutely. That sounds so cool.
It's a creative process in itself. You're recreating a work. And I actually wrote to Kevin and I said, you know, I hope you don't mind, but I've made this mine.
Yeah. And so have you been in contact with him throughout?
Absolutely.
What's that been like?
Oh, it's been really, really very, very, very nice. He was thrilled that I was the type of person that actually that went a little bit deeper than a lot of people do. He offered to send me very early on a digitally played version of the piece, because they often do that. You can play one line in at a time and the computer will assemble it for you. And you can actually, even on some machines, you can actually dial in the tempo that you want, and then it will reproduce that. But I said, no, can you hold off on that? Because that will influence me too much. Let me see what I come up with, and I'll let you know, and then we can talk about, you know, what you think. And so we've been, you know, the emails have been, you know, been going back and forth. And it's been rather nice. And then I actually did listen to it, and it was very, very, it was quite different than I had imagined it. Number one, the digitally sounding thing on a synthesizer, it sounds awfully cold, unemotional, because of nothing sustaining, it's kind of on the faster side. And I said, no, this is not what I'm thinking.
How have rehearsals been going for the piece?
First rehearsal actually was yesterday. And just as I thought, the only problems that we have are a couple of technical issues in the first movement. The third movement has this beautiful opening to it with strings relatively high, a little bit strange interval, so we have to work on intonation there, and a beautiful singing sound. This is a very, very... in terms of listening to it, a very, very easily accessible piece, I would say, for even for a lay listener. It's something that has a lot of warmth, a lot of meaning. There's humor in it. The second movement is about her learning how to play the violin, and she's astounded at what ugly sounds she can make. At which point, Willa has to play, who's concert mistress, has to play these awful sounding clusters, you know, as basically a kind of... source of humor. And it has a lot of things. Emotionally, the third movement is about longing for someone. The title is Ache. He uses the, even the inner sounds of a person aching for somebody. So slides, portamenti, you know, just mm-hmm. And he uses that actually within the piece, and the orchestration is so well done that I don't believe there will be any balance problems whatsoever. He's just basically followed the principle, when the singer is singing, we're going to make this rather sparse, rather very, very, very transparent. And when the singer isn't singing, then that's when the orchestra can actually have its say. And so it's not that small an orchestra. It has a rather complete wind section. But when the singer is at work, then it thins out, becomes harmonics, becomes strings alone, becomes two clarinets alone. There's one movement for six people, basically. And so there's a lot of difference, diversity in the sound itself mm-hmm. within the piece.
So you talked earlier about your own emotional process, looking at the piece and learning the piece. How, when you're rehearsing with the orchestra, how do you kind of communicate that to the orchestra? Are there certain things that you kind of feel like you need to drive home, especially with a new piece?
Sometimes I like to point out what I found. Like I pointed out yesterday how the harmonies were actually kind of put together, and what I thought, and then what his response was to my thinking. And it was there were slightly different thinkings. Like I was thinking, just to learn it, I was noticing there was like an F sharp major chord on the bottom. There was an F major chord on top. And it was very, very easy for me to learn almost with parallel major harmonies going on. And I asked him, I said, do you hear this bitonally? He said, actually, no, I hear the chord as one entity on top of each other. So it doesn't really, I mean, you can hear it any way you want it. You can learn it any way you want it. It was just, you know, I just wanted to put that out there because the kids would never know, oh, there are two major harmonies going on at the same time. And it actually helps them do intonation. It helps them actually put everything in some kind of relationship mm-hmm. for themselves, how they want to hear it, how they discover actually that they want themselves want to hear it. And one of the kids had said yesterday, after we finished the last one, she says, my God, it's so beautiful. It's just so, you know, drop-dead gorgeous. I mean, the harmonies, they're not really totally, they're very, very accessible. I wouldn't consider them romantic harmonies, but these are harmonies that could easily be put in contemporary setting, but they all work out in a tonal way, I would almost say.
So as an educator and working on this piece with your students, what does it mean to give them this opportunity to work on such a new, exciting piece with Renee Fleming, with such a great artist?
Well, I just think that the school being based the way it is in terms of incorporating a lot of musicology, a lot of theory, having last night we played one of the young composer's pieces, actually having that as an option every year for the composition students. I think the students in the orchestra are used to actually working on new music. That's number one. They oftentimes actually will, and I was always amazed at this because in Juilliard it was not the case. They would put their all into you know, a fellow student's piece, whereas sometimes, you know, one of the classics might just get shoved out the side door sometimes. But I mean, they were always very, very excited about playing new music, and a lot of the kids actually love to play musica nova and try to, you know, do that rotation on top of the other rotation that they have. So sometimes that actually causes a problem at times. But they're very, very, very much into playing new music in general and actually working on it where the composer himself is an alumnus and can actually say, well, I wrote this, I meant this, let's see if we can actually adjust. It's just dealing, I mean, every composer, I know the way Kevin works, and it's often, well, this is what I wrote, it's not exactly what I meant, let's change it. So, I mean, they begin to see that the text is basically an approach to an idea or a concept. And especially when the composer is alive, just as when Mahler was alive, he adjusted his symphonies and the orchestration all the time, that might happen here. And they're part of the creative process.
It's a living document.
It's a living document, exactly. I mean, this is not dead. This is going to be alive and will be further alive and might be changed to some extent. And naturally, having an artist like René, who... when we performed last time together, it was very, very easy for me to work with her because, especially the Strauss songs that we did, her German is, and I was in Germany, as you all know, for 30 some odd years. Her German is good as any German's German, especially to not only to the extent of the way she speaks the language or pronounces the words. That has nothing to do with it. What one notices, especially if one is fluent, is that she understands the hidden meanings of the text and inflects that in the way she sings and the way she speaks. That is amazing. So I'm assuming that she will do the same kind of thing and the same go through the same kind of recreative process that I went through with these texts. And then we just get together on what we want to do. And in this case, with an artist like that, you give them free rein and see what they want.
What is your favorite part of the piece?
I'm very curious. God.
Do you have a favorite part?
I actually do. I love the end. But there are so many beautiful sections. There are so many beautiful sections. And if you look, you'll see that the illustrations and the images of the music go along with the text. Sometimes they talk about Indian war cries or when the Indians rode through the hills. And you actually hear almost like a war cry in the woodwinds, you know. And it helps you identify certain things. It puts things in perspective. Not that it's a big deal, but it helps you kind of say, oh, there's that and there's that. And maybe I can bring that out there. And then you'll have one really expansive line where you feel like, should I beat that to death or should I just kind of be the big line? But then she talks about being expansive. So it's really kind of great. She says, see, I was right. The harmonies demand that. But you have to, you know, sometimes you have to kind of jostle things and keep things together anyway. But the end is just sheer gorgeousness in total harmony and sound, where basically it's kind of almost like walking into the vastness of the universe, almost. I mean, and she's saying that this land, it's amazing how much she loves this country because of the vastness, because the sky seems like it just could go on forever. And it's very, very, very beautiful. And the music is almost timeless. And that's why I love the end.
That's so great. Wow. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, I think I've said it all.